Because obviously we were like asylum seekers, so we were isolated a lot growing up. So it was like we just did what we liked. And I guess I liked music. Yeah. My sister loved cooking growing up. Corey, she loved fashion. Yeah. And Lalu loved talking. So like I guess we all just kind of went off in our direction.
Simba, where did that name come from?
Simba, it's actually mad. Obviously, I love The Lion King, so it comes from that. But the day I first got called Simba by someone was in college, and I just started growing my beard, and then he just saw me across the hallway, and I was like, Simba, rah! And then it just stopped.
I see it, you know, yeah? I was more thinking, I was like, who is carrying you on top of a cliff?
What's going on? No one's carrying me. No one's carrying me.
Yeah. Over Black Rock or something like that. So tell us a bit about yourself, sir.
Yeah, so me, my name is Simba. I run a recording studio, Jungle Beam Studio. I've been running studios for the past 10, 12 years, and I just love music. So I've just been immersed in the music, and now I'm just looking to do a few more other stuff, but still centered around music.
Yeah.
I grew up in the church. So my dad was a pastor, so I was playing the drums. I was a sound guy in the church. So obviously that kind of like helped me without me knowing.
Right.
Because like, I had to be in church Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes on Wednesdays as well.
Wait, what? Why?
Fridays for night vigil, Saturday for choir practice, and Sunday for the church. For the main thing.
Man.
For the main
so
event.
So night vigil every week?
Yeah, it was like, it was weird because there was the main night vigil every last Friday of the month. Then on Mondays was like men's night vigil.
Oh, man.
The second one would be like women. Then the third one would be like the youth night vigil. Then
and as pastors, like, so like you need to be there the entire
the
time.
I do the sound.
Sound. Oh, right. Mad. You know what? The Holy Spirit, I can feel it in you right now. Yeah.
Let's get it.
I feel like that church music person to like producer pipeline needs to be studied.
Yeah.
Like loads of people that go from, like, when you talk about their origins in music, definitely a lot, like it leads back to church a lot of the time.
Which is
superb.
You get, because if you think about it in church, like the church is going on and you're at the back and you have the desk in front of you, so like you're controlling everything. Like my man over there is controlling everything right now. It just it's really the way. So like it kind of translates into being in the studio and controlling everything in the studio.
Yeah, and like I supposed to say as well, like, you know, the talent in the church is also like crazy. Like, you know, what was that like? What was it like experiencing that?
The talent was crazy. There was, the choir was beautiful, cause obviously, maybe you guys know, I was singing, I was rapping, I did a few CDs there and there. Mm-hmm. It was cause I was in the church cause of the talent around me, so it was like, it just rubbed off me and I just had to try it out as well. I was like,
give us a few bars then.
No.
Freestyle.
That's Tunde show.
Yeah, it's not Simba, yeah.
It's very different. And tell me, when did you make the switch from like rapping and music into like production and engineering?
I'd always been engineering and producing, but I'd say 2010, I was like, I actually don't enjoy rapping anymore. Because it was when like rapping was changing as well, like the new flow was coming in. I was like, I don't want to rap like that. I let these other guys do it. They're very good at it. Let me just be behind the scenes and just do what I need to do. So yeah, that's when I kind of stopped. But I still like produce here and there, but I'm mainly just engineer now.
Yeah. You've been in this quite a long time. You're probably like a great person to talk to about, you know, the rise of like Irish music, Irish rap scene, Cello, and like charting,
exactly.
Officer doing bits with like the band. There's so many other, I'm obviously probably the worst person to talk about this, but there's so many other like great talents out there.
Yeah.
How has the journey been so far to get where we are from your eyes?
Like as a whole, as
the Irish music rap scene. Music scene, yeah.
It's, for me, it's always been like up and down. I think the times when we have some, like when we see people getting successful is when we've had some sort of stability. Probably like 10 years ago, there was like, we had that little 2-year period where people were stable. Everything was, people were dropping music consistently. People were making money from music. But then it kind of just went downhill, but now we're at that. I don't know. We were talking to someone. It was like, is there renaissance?
Renaissance in the music scene. Yeah.
So we're at that. We're at that.
Merlin, like, God knows.
Yeah. Because like, there's a lot of quality. There's really a lot of quality. My problem with the scene a couple of months ago was like, we weren't dropping music properly. But I've been speaking with a lot of artists, and they all thinking the same way as well. So they all like all going back and figuring out how to drop music, how to present it to the public properly. So
what does that mean exactly? How do you drop music properly?
Like look at Cello.
Right,
For a Cello tape, you saw it everywhere.
Yeah,
you saw that it was advertised everywhere. Was
literally everywhere.
So that's one aspect of it, the marketing, the promotion of it. But that's also because he had a machine behind it, because big Cello. not every artist can do that. But there's ways you can do it. Like FA, anytime she's dropping music, like, you see people in town like with blue wigs, was it blue or purple wigs? Like just random people. But then she'll capture that on video and put that all over TikTok. Right. So like that creates an awareness. She's dropping something. So it's like just doing something a little bit different. That's what I feel like. Just a little bit different. Because like the 60,000 songs dropped on Spotify every day.
Sorry, what?
60,000
globally.
Every day.
60,000 songs.
So it's like you can't just put it out and be like, yeah, yo guys, check out my new song.
That is a stat and a half. Yeah, isn't it?
That's crazy.
It's a lot of
do you listen? How many of them do you listen to?
Yeah.
As a producer, you should be listening to at least 55,000. Yeah.
Would you please get out of that? I'm working on a lot of them, please.
He produces 40,000. Entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. and going from being a producer into also like owning a business around music production and owning a studio. What was that journey like?
Like the music scene, it was up and down. It was like it has a stability period and it has this period where it wasn't really working. But I'd say it was just me just trying different things, just trying different things and just going over and over again. I'd say like I became like proper legit as a studio probably like 4 or 5 years ago. And I've been running studios before that. So it's like the entrepreneurship in it is like just figuring out ways on how to get clients. But I always tell people that I'm kind of lucky, because not lucky, yeah, because I started early. I started before the foundation was really laid. So like a lot of artists have gone through me, and just word of mouth really helped me in the early days. That's why I tell, because a lot of engineers ask me these days that, oh, Simba, how can I just say, you just have to keep going and just keep getting your name out there. There's no, with the engineering, there's no secret, you need to do this, do that. You just have to keep going.
Yeah.
And we're going full time, you know, that sounds like quite a big jump. Was it 4 years ago?
Yeah.
What kind of like spurred you to do that? And then what were you seeing that you're like, you know what, maybe I can do this full time?
Yeah. That was around the time where Defract was doing the stuff on YouTube. So the scene, like, there was a lot of new artists. And with music, when, as an artist, if you see you see an artist doing good, you'd be like, oh, I can do that. So it will give birth to more artists, per se. So I saw that and I was like, oh. And that was, at this time, I was working out of my house. I was working out of my living room.
Right.
And it was, I'll go to work 9 to 5, come home, do like 6 to 12 in the living room. But every Monday to Friday, I had that 6 to 12. Like, it was always booked out. Then Saturday, right, I'll do like 8 hours. So then I was like, okay, I think it's time that I can leave this job and actually just do this properly. So then I was like, yeah, let's be legit. Find a new spot. And I just kept going with it. But it was just because the artists, once the artists are doing what, like Tello, with the drill, with Monjola, with Torin, with Kid Cudi, like that's crazy. That's gonna give birth to so many more artists that be like, yo, I can. Oh, Monjola that lives down the road is doing that. I can do that as well. So it's good for me in a sense, because it brings more business. But then it's also a chance to find great artists.
Yeah, that piece of people being able to look up and see people advancing in the field that they want to go into is really important.
Yeah.
Not only in the creative scene, but also in the business scene. Because obviously not everyone that is involved in music will want to be that kind of like spotlight character. There's definitely some people that have key interest in music, like music marketing or music management or production or whatever. And I think what you're doing is creating a great space for people to say, oh, I can be a business owner in a field of interest of mine. So definitely want to give you your flowers on that. I think that's a superb piece. Quick fire round. who's your favorite artist to work with?
And you have to answer.
Yeah, no. There's no chicken in there. Every artist is wonderful.
Every artist is wonderful. We'll start with that. But probably Dania. Probably Dania, because we just kind of just get each other.
I think, you know, a lot of people might not be fully aware of, as a producer and as an engineer, your job is not just to actually take their track and do what they want for it. You're also there to like up level them as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like upskill them and give advice and give feedback and stuff like that. So what's that like?
Oh, it's fun, because it's always tricky navigating it, because every artist is different. You might be the type of artist that, if I say, oh bro, just try that again, you could be better, you could respond to that, or you could just be, you might not get it. You might be the type of artist that needs me to say, yo bro, that was ass, man, just go again. You might respond to that better and actually do better. So it's like it's always weird figuring it out, but after like the first two takes in the booth, I kind of know how to talk to the artist.
Sure.
I kind of know that, okay, yo bro, what are you doing? Yeah. And they'll get it. But some people, you do that to them, they just clam up.
Oh yeah, not me. See, I'm an absolute narcissist, all right? If you're to tell me something that like, oh, you've done this wrong, I'd be heartbroken.
Yeah.
I can't handle it.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know what
I mean? Yeah.
I like no, I'm not doing this music thing anymore. Forget this.
You know That's mean? Why you're not in the studio. Yeah.
Well, I'm in the studio right now. But I'm just waiting for the first person to
come. Drop a bar. Drop a bar then. Come on.
No.
He's going to do it.
He's ready. He wants to go.
One of these days, I'm going to drop a track, and it's going to be the hottest track in Ireland. But until that day,
I can't wait for it.
Yeah,
I can wait. I hope that day does not come.
Another thing I was telling you earlier about how I react really badly.
Oh yeah, sorry. I mean, you can do it, Leon. Positive words of affirmation. Yeah. I'm sorry.
What are traits in artists that like you really can't stand, or what are like pet peeves that you have by working with artists?
I think all my clients know this, just resting over my chair, like, get away from me.
Well, like behind you.
Yeah. Stop breathing your hot breath on me, man.
I just feel like I'm in the one spot.
Does your girlfriend even do that to you?
No. She doesn't even do that to me. So it's like, why are you so close to me? Why are you trying to whisper in my ear?
Whisper in my ear.
Yeah.
I like that. No. So that'll be one of them. Everybody knows that. Probably been late, because that's just pushing everything back. That's just pushing the schedule back for the whole day.
Yeah.
And that puts them under pressure as well. They start rushing. Then you end up having to book another session to come back and do the song again. So, yeah, but I don't really have much pet peeves. Another one is actually when you do a mix, you send it to the client and they listen on their phone like this. They just play on the speaker on their phone like this. And then they text you, yo, Simba, I can't hear the snare. I'm like, bro.
You listen on your phone. Yeah, listen. On your iPhone 8.
Yeah, listen.
Us uninitiated to the music scene, why is that bad?
Because you can't really hear much. When I do a mix, I will listen on my phone, listen in the car, listen on my AirPods, and listen on my headphones, just to see how it sounds on different stuff. If you're just coming back to me with mix revisions after just listening on your phone speaker that is like not that great in the first place, it's you're not giving the mix a chance.
You're not taking it in the full thing. Yeah.
Taking it properly. I was watching a podcast with 90s Baby, and they had Enchi, Wizkid's bodyguard, on, and he was saying like one thing you all need to do is go to a studio to listen to music. Go to a recording studio, because the way the room is treated, you're hearing every single thing in the music. Look. Give me a text.
Okay. That's lighting
the DMs. We have a music party.
Yeah, I'm in.
You have to spit a verse though.
I might need like a year to write something.
365 days.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a question actually for you, more around like entrepreneurship and building out the business and diversifying. You know, I've seen like through your socials, maybe like, you know, you like working with like, you know, podcasters and like, or non-rap based kind of people. Why is that, and what are you trying to achieve with that?
Non-rap based, yeah, because I work with like all sorts of music, first and foremost. So like, you see me working with everybody that makes good music, and working with podcasts is like, why not diversify? I have the stuff there. I used to be in a podcast, so it's like I want to level up my space so I can have like just a space designated to podcast. a space designated to people that do videos and just want to do audio voiceovers just for that. Mm-hmm. So it's like my love for music stems from my love for audio. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it just goes hand in hand.
I know your little brother, you know, Lally, who's yeah. on like a very successful podcast. Your sister, Corday, I guess she's like a mini influencer. Mm-hmm. Your other sister, Lammy, she runs a very successful cooking business. What a mad successful Lammy family.
Your sister as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like,
I did not know that. I thought it was only 3 years.
No, it's worse.
What's it like being in such a high achieving family?
I don't know. We just
Your parents done something right.
Yeah, they definitely did something right. Obviously, my dad had a business going up, so we saw that. We all saw the entrepreneurship in the house from early, and obviously, he was also a pastor. So, like, it's like running two businesses. So, like, we saw all that, and I guess it just kind of rubbed off. People always ask me if I wasn't doing music, what would I be doing? And I'm not sure.
Really?
I'm really not sure. So it's like, yeah. We just kind of worked, and I guess also being like, because obviously we were asylum seekers, so we were isolated a lot growing up. So it was like we just did what we liked, and I guess I liked music. Yeah. My sister loved cooking growing up. Corday, obviously she loved fashion. Loved fashion,
yeah.
And Lalu loved talking. So like I guess we all just kind of went off in our directions and yeah. just kind of do what we do.
Coming from the asylum seeker process, which a lot of people have come out about and talked about being like a really difficult thing and a really difficult system to be in, seeing how well you've all flourished, I think is a real testament to your resilience, your creativity, and just like your strength of character or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's huge. But tell us a little bit more about what it was like on moving through that asylum seeker process and maybe some of the challenges that people might not be aware of.
Yeah, no, it was long. I'm not gonna lie. Obviously, we came down and we were in Dublin for like 2 weeks, and we got moved to Scariff, which is like just one long street. And we were there for like 6 months, and we got moved again to Athlone, to the caravan homes, and then we were there for like 3 years. So that one was a bit okay, but obviously, you could make your own food, but they were still feeding you. You still had like routine. You still had to queue up for food. So we got out of it after so many years, and we're here now. But stuff that goes on in that place, just people not getting fed right. The laundry room's not working.
Yeah.
You can't wash your clothes. So
yeah.
Little silly stuff that at the time you're like, oh, you don't deep it, but after a while I'm like, yeah, that's messed up.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I've certainly heard a lot from people, is that it's only when you've gone through it that you're able to look back and go like, oh my God, like that was not right.
Yeah, because even like with the school, because we were like it was called camp. It was basically called camp. So like when you're in school, like this was early 2000s, so people knew like if you're not Irish, you're most likely asylum seeker, so they would use that to get at you in school, like
the
kids. So they'll use that to get at you. So it was I'm glad I was able to get through it, but I had friends that it really affected them at the times. Like they just end up, we ended up in fights a lot because as a result of it. So but I was able to get out of it, but some of them were not. So
maybe back to Jungle Beam and to the future now, and like what's next for you, and also what do you think is next for the Irish scene?
I'm in the process of just not handing off the business to someone else, but just having more engineers, being more active in the studio. So that's a process of me allowing my clients to know, okay, this guy that I've trained is also can do what you need him to do, so that I can venture off into other stuff. Simba's Den is a platform that I want to do. It's almost done anyways.
If I can jump into one last topic. Over the summer, we started going to festivals together. I found out while you were there that this is your first festival route that you were going to. So tell us how that went. How was the festival scene in Ireland?
Oh, the festival was beautiful. it was insane. Obviously, I started off with Longitude. My thing for not going to festivals before was that I don't know if it's bad, but I just said I never wanted to pay for a festival. I wanted to go into a festival, and it's paid for. I wanted to just go there and enjoy
myself. Live the soft life.
Yeah, exactly. Soft life, I wanted to do soft life, small. So I went to Longitude, had a great time with Black and Irish Boys, with Gory, Red, all the boys. Then what was the next one after that?
All Together Now was the best one. And then obviously we got Wash Over our EP.
Yeah, it was wet, but it was nice wet.
Simba, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us on the Black and Irish Podcast.
Subscribe to the Black and Irish Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the RTE Radio Player app.